Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for being a Plus member, and I think we have a great show for you today. But first, I have a great deal to tell you about if you are a monthly Plus member. Now, if you're a monthly Plus member, you pay $7.95 every month for our new Paranormal Plus Club. And I think that's a pretty good deal. But an even better deal is our yearly deal where you pay $79.50 for a year. That's basically 12 months for the price of 10, right? I'm not very good at math, but I think I can figure that out. But then you add up on top of it what we have a special deal going currently for monthly Paranormal Plus members. And this is only disclosed to people like you. This is not available to the public. We have some sales going on as I speak right now, but they're not as good as this one. It is $25 off your first year as a yearly Paranormal Plus member to our new Paranormal Plus Club. So that's for your first year. And all you have to do is go into the Libsyn console, your dashboard, on your membership, and you change your subscription, and you just sign up for a year and use the promo code, the coupon code, UPGRADE18. That is the word upgrade, the number 1, and the number 8, no spaces. Whatever you have left on your monthly membership will continue to go through. And then instead of renewing monthly when it comes up, then your discounted yearly first year will kick in. I hope you'll check it out. It is a special deal for monthly Paranormal Plus members. Again, you can use that coupon code UPGRADE18 to get $25 off your first year of the Paranormal Plus Club. So, if you're monthly, consider going yearly. Save some money and get all the great content. And here's the show. UFOs. Are they aliens? Government secret projects? The imaginings of disturbed individuals? Or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters. Welcome to UFO Encounters. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And when we talk about UFOs, one thing that is of great interest is visual evidence. And it's so difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff. There's so much out there these days, not to mention things like drones and so forth. There's so many things to look at when you look at UFO photos. And my goodness, I think it's harder than ever to do analysis of them. But we've got a great guest to help us suss out the confusion. I'm talking about Jason Gleaves. He is the author of the recent book, UFO Photos, Computer Analysis of Worldwide UFO Images Throughout the Decades. And he does indeed have expertise in the area that can help him make these determinations. He is ex-Royal Air Force, and he holds a PTEC, National Diploma in Computer Aided Drafting and Engineering, a BTEC National Diploma in Carpentry and Joinery, and a BTEC National Diploma in Aircraft Finishing, Electrostatic, and Powder Coating Techniques. He has high expertise in modern civilian and military worldwide aircraft and armament recognition and visualization. He's contributed over the last 10 years to numerous UFO webpages and media, and he's carried out photographic image and video footage analysis on unidentified flying objects and associated anomalies for many ufologists within the community worldwide by using the latest updated imagery, computer science, technology, and software available. And we're so glad to have him with us. Jason, welcome to the program today.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for the invite.
Oh, it's good to be here. Now, obviously, particularly with your CAD background, your Royal Air Force background, and your aircraft finishing and so forth. I mean, I kind of can see the connections, but why did you decide to start taking a serious look at UFO photos and using computer analysis to try to get to the truth?
Well, that really started, it goes way back before I was interested in ufology and photos and imagery. When I had a sighting with my sister when I was 7 years old in Liverpool, and I'd actually forgotten about the sighting. My sister brought it up only a few years ago when it started to delve deeper into this subject. And then we were playing together in our auntie's house years ago. It must have been round about 1970s, round about that era. I remember being 7 years old, and what we recall is seeing a disc-shaped object outside of the window, and then it flew off at high velocity, left us both baffled and bewildered what it was. And I'd actually forgotten about it. It was my sister that brought it up. And then obviously through my life and my military career later on, I had there was an incident happened at RAF Cosford, which is a training camp in the Midlands here. It's in March 1993 it happened. And on that evening, throughout the whole of the UK, this craft, this huge triangular-shaped black craft, was seen at numerous places right across the UK by on-duty policemen and other witnesses. And it came down over the Air Force base at Cosford.
Now, you mentioned something there about triangular UFOs. And I think those are some of the most fascinating. I believe in Belgium there was a rash of sightings. And certainly if you look at Phoenix Lights, at that video, it's kind of a triangular shape in some cases. What analysis have you done on triangular UFOs and what have you found?
Well, again, a lot of unidentified in origin. A lot of people misidentify seeing triangular craft, and it could be secret covert military aircraft, which are being sighted. Obviously, unidentified flying object, that's what it stands for, UFO. So people are not recognizing what they're seeing. It could be stealth aircraft or drones, anything of that sort. If it's anything else other than from this earth, extraterrestrial in origin, example, it could be anything really. It's but I have analyzed quite a few different images that were sent to me over the years and tried to dig deeper into it. And a lot of things that come up are the TR-3B, which is quite widely known now, which is an anti-gravity aircraft of some kind. Who it belongs to, nobody actually knows.
Yeah, and I find that fascinating, the idea. And that's something that maybe we should touch on a little bit. Now, I think a lot of people who are believers of UFOs, I think there's a considerable amount of people who think, this is solely a phenomena that is possibly extraterrestrial. But I think even if you believe that there is an extraterrestrial component, I think you have to acknowledge that at least a decent percentage of these cases have to be or probably are some kind of secret military technology development. How would you respond?
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely. Again, people are having experiences around the world, and I myself, I've had them in the past, and people have come to me with their experiences and sightings. I also believe, regarding military, etc., when people see a craft that isn't extraterrestrial, for example, it suits the military when somebody says they've seen a UFO and it isn't actually a craft from elsewhere. It suits the military more to the fact that they've got the perfect cover story.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. And I have to remember, I think we have to remind people from time to time, some people, when they hear the word UFO, that automatically means extraterrestrial. UFO simply means what it says, unidentified flying object. So if you say you saw a UFO, that doesn't mean that you saw something, little green men, so to speak. It just means that you can't identify it. Now, Jason, I've got to believe, and I think you mentioned in some of the notes and so forth that I saw, that you've looked at some of the classic cases like the Battle of Los Angeles, which is... perhaps maybe you can refresh people's memory on it. An absolutely fascinating case. But some of the classic cases, did you take a look at some of those in this book?
Yeah, I tried to. This book, I really tried to. Well, to go back to the beginning, really, I've got a UFO page, which is on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, which people can see all material in there freely. And the book is really an extension from that, where really it delves in. What I wanted to do with the book is just really put some sort of publication out there for people, sort of on a layman's term, so when they pick the book up, they can read into UFOs, like we've just explained, and it gives you misidentifications, etc. But I really wanted to just go over the basic stories and cases that have come up over the years of UFOs unidentified, and just give people a background, really, of the way it goes. And then they can also, you know, make their own mind up what they're seeing through the analysis that I've carried out on each case.
Well, let's bring that one up. I would like a little more detail on the Battle of Los Angeles. I believe it was 1942, and basically the gist, as I recall it, was off the California coast, there were all of these reports of some kind of craft, and they literally were firing at it because they were afraid of some kind of Japanese invasion after, of course, Pearl Harbor had everybody in a panic. The country was in a state of war. It never really was identified. And there was that famous front page picture where all the Klieg lights look like that they are trained on this object. And I believe it was the Los Angeles Times. So this was no small tabloid. This was the major newspaper of record for Los Angeles. This was a big deal. Talk to us about the Battle of Los Angeles, because I think that is the most interesting case ever.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly intriguing when you look into it and you see the information available that you can look in yourself. And I say to anybody out there, research themselves, you know, really get in and have a look for yourself, because the information's all there for you. But this incident happened, Los Angeles, like you said, 1942. And I think it was over the evening of the 24th and 25th of February. And it was a huge craft. It was hanging there motionless in the sky. The military fired continuously at this thing through the night, and it didn't waver, it didn't move. And there was actually civilians who were killed through the falling shells that didn't hit the object. So the analysis I actually carried out on it later, and it's been well looked into through all the military throughout the world. I mean, people have looked into this case. You can see through the analysis, the photographs, it's certainly got structure to it. It's large. It's a large craft, and to this day, still unidentified.
Yeah, it's a great case, and I think it's one of those where when people say, there's nothing to this, I think you just go back to that case and say, okay, explain that. One of the things that's really difficult, I would think, is unfortunately there are people out there, for whatever reason, maybe it's the perception of fame or fortune, maybe it's just wanting to get attention, maybe it's just wanting to play a bit of a practical joke on everyone, the idea of hoaxes. Using computer analysis, how do you tell a hoaxed photograph from a real photograph, and whether that's film or that's digital?
Well, generally, hoaxes have become quite a bit of a pain in ufology, and it's misled and misleading people to believe other things. And people really want the truth. They just want to know what these objects are. And like you said, people are out there to make money and fame from sightings. And that's fair enough if they want to do that. But it doesn't give great credit to the ufology and people who are really trying to research and bring up information videos and images, and legit images as well, you know, from around the world. It's difficult now with CGI. It's harder to identify really what is a fake and what isn't fake, with people wanting to make money, then they'll go all out to make these things look really authentic. I find a lot of the older photographs, so you're talking pre-Photoshop era, were harder to fake, if you call it that. And really, when you look into it and you research into all these different cases, really you need to look at the person who is posting or publishing the photographs, their background, other things that can happen in the area, weather conditions, airports, aircraft, military bases. You've really got to look into an awful lot of things before you can start to come up with a picture of what you're seeing or what you believe you're seeing. That's before you actually put filters or anything else like that, which do really enhance and bring out detail in quite a few photographs that I've actually analyzed.
Yeah, I've got to say that it's unfortunate that there are people like that, but I think in any range of endeavor, that is the case, that some people are going to try to benefit from it in a dishonest way, and it's just kind of a fact of life. And to me, it's more frustrating now than ever, as kind of you pointed out. I used to do a show called The Paranormal Report. It was a video podcast, and we did it for a few years with both Clayton Morris and Micah Hanks, and it was a tremendous amount of fun to do. We would play various clips that had been released that were supposedly paranormal or UFO footage or those kind of things. But after a few years, it got frustrating because you had the sense that a lot of this was just hoaxed video. And it became more frustrating and more frustrating. And then you add on, and we stopped doing the show, and then you add on something like drones. I've got to believe that drones are a challenge, not only because of people hoaxing, but people not realizing what they're seeing. Are drones a particularly sticky wicket for you?
Yeah, they are becoming more of that, but especially with them being more widespread and available for everyone to purchase in shops, and they're becoming more sophisticated, and they can fly higher and faster, and they have LED lights on, so at night time you can be misidentified. And I mean, a good example is just the Olympics that have just passed now, where the opening ceremony, they had all the drones set out in the crest of the Olympics, all flying together exactly, and it just proves what they can actually do. So they're quite easily misidentified.
Yeah, I could see that being particularly annoying. What is one of your favorite cases, one that you think is just really remarkable?
Oh, there's so many. Really, I think in the book, I suppose that there's one footage that was actually taken by an Argentinian civilian pilot. It was he'd actually had encounters of UFOs for a few years, and he didn't, at the time when he was flying his aircraft, he couldn't see. He obviously didn't have a camera or anything with him to take photographs at the time, so he decided to take his mobile phone up with him. And this instance, you can actually see the footage on my UFO Only YouTube channel, which it's much better to see the footage itself than photographs, but that's the only way I could do it in the book. And he was basically flying his plane along. He saw these two disc-shaped objects coming from his left-hand side as he was flying. And the view of the camera, you can actually see the propeller in front of him through the front windscreen of his aircraft. And these two objects basically buzzed his aircraft right in front, dangerously close, you know, for the aircraft. Then they shot around in a large loop to his right-hand side before coming back again right in front of his aircraft. But like I said, if you look at the footage, the video footage that is actually I've analysed and put on the on my page, it's amazing to watch.
Now, when we think about UFO craft, we think of the saucer shape. What are the most common shapes that you see, and what are the themes in terms of appearance that you see repeating themselves over and over again?
Well, the disc shape has been around a long time, and I think that really goes back towards the Kenneth Arnold sighting in where the name UFO actually came from, flying disc. But they change over periods of time, like we just said earlier on, where in the 90s, early 90s through, you've got the triangular shaped craft they were seeing more around the world. And lately, I would say orbs. There's orb-shaped craft which are appearing, and especially appearing around chemtrails, that type of thing that people see and photograph. And there's I've got quite a few really good photographs, and I've been analysing those. Where I've also been working on sightings. A good friend of mine, Peter Maxwell Slattery, and Loretta in Australia, and they've got some amazing photographs and video footage of UFOs, orbs, and disc shaped. And I'm also working on a project in the minute with Peter and Soretta and James Gilliand. So that should be good when it comes out.
The technology, I think, is fascinating in what you use to analyze photos with. So just take us through the process. Let's say it's a modern digital photo. How do you go about analyzing this?
People send me photographs constantly to be analyzed from around the world of all different anomalies, shapes, sizes of craft, orbs, etc. I always try to ask for the original photograph or the original print or image or anything that they've actually taken, just for the fact that it's going to be the best quality you're going to actually get to analyze with. So the reason I say that is when people post photographs and somebody else will post that photograph on again and it'll go to another website, etc. You're talking first, second, third generation photograph, right? And each time it's losing quality.
Right.
So you'll get the photograph in anyway and the best quality. The first thing I would generally try to do is upscale the photograph. So there's image software out there, which is generally free to use. Anybody can use this and do this process. And if you upscale the photograph, you're actually going to try and keep the quality, best resolution you can get. Because if you take an original photograph and just zoom in straight away, you'll generally find all you'll get is a pixelated photograph, sort of chunky effect, which is not really good to anybody. So after I've upscaled the photograph and I've got the best quality, then you can actually start to look into it using different filters, etc., and enhancement techniques. It's all widely available to everybody. There's no secret in it. Anybody can do this. And it's amazing the results you can actually get from it yourself.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what software is that you can use, the free software?
It's just a normal Photoshop, Adobe. I think I actually use it at the minute, but I change different as the software gets better and new additions come out, and the software is a lot more easier and better things to analyze photographs with. But it's just basically something that people haven't really been doing. And when you enhance the photographs and use filters, it really does bring out detail that you can't normally see in a normal photograph. So a good example, if you were looking into a cave where you've taken a photograph and it's really dark inside the cave, but if you invert the photograph or use a filter, you can generally see what's in that cave if the detail comes through. But you've got to remember also with Photoshop, people get the wrong impression that you're actually meddling around with photographs or editing photographs, and you're not doing that. You're not using Photoshop for that reason. You're just using it to enhance the photograph and bring out the detail.
Now, do you just focus on photos, or do you also look at videos or film?
Videos too. Again, a lot of footage that I receive, or just research myself. You know, I do an awful lot of research myself. I generally find if you're actually looking at videos, you will get a better grasp of what you're seeing because of the environment. You can generally, if people have taken a really good capture of an anomaly or a craft that they don't know what it is at first, and they get trees or buildings, the ground even, cars, people, anything in the shot, it's great because it gives you perspective on the object you're actually trying to analyze. And you can actually get distance and anything relevant and important to go with that.
It strikes me that not only does someone like you have a lot more tools at their disposal than they used to in terms of better, faster computers, better software, better technology to analyze, but it strikes me that on the other side, hoaxers have much better technology to create fakes. Am I right? Is this kind of like a UFO photographic, videographic arms race between people like you who want to get at the truth and people who maybe want to pull the wool over our eyes?
Yeah, it's sort of a fight in that respect. But if I don't have a problem with anybody who wants to do that sort of thing. If that's what they want to do and carry on with it, so be it. You know, I've got my own path to follow and just trying to get out the truth of photographs and what people and experiences and other people who haven't really got the answers would like to know. If fakes are a pain, and you can see through quite a few of them, like I said, you've got to look at the source where they're coming from, and that's enough to make you switch off your computer to what you're seeing.
Right.
If you go in, people who are genuinely not out for the fame and fortune, and they're out to basically get the answers, they're the people I need to spend more time and really take the time to look at their evidence.
It's one of those things where, for me, it's very frustrating that people would do that. Now, it's one thing if somebody says, hey, I made this cool video with CGI, and it looks like there's an invasion of Washington, D.C. or London or whatever, and this is cool, and this is obviously a fake, and I'm saying it's a fake. It's just a neat thing that I've created. That's one thing. But to me, when people put stuff out there and say, this is real, this is the proof, it's annoying to me. You're much more kind than I am in that regard. But I appreciate that. That's really, I guess, the way you should be. Just focus on your own, stick to your knitting, as they say. I totally respect that. So I've got to believe, after all of this work and all of this time, that you maybe have come to some theories or some conclusions. What are some of your theories and conclusions?
Well, basically, I personally believe we are being visited by extraterrestrials. I also believe there are bases throughout the world where they've always been here. Just through my own research, really, it's my opinion. I've got opinions on everybody and every sort of encounter and experience, and I do look into everything I can, even watch videos that I believe in my own mind that are not real, but I will still watch them because I need to get to the bottom and answer the question, because I've still got a lot of answers myself. And also, when I've posted images or and wrote cases on sightings, etc., and believe them to be authentic, and then found out later that they're not, or I've received information, etc., I'm the first person to go back on and actually say to people, no, this isn't real, this is, I believe it's this, that, or the other. And there's nothing wrong with being wrong, because we're all human. I just believe that we are being visited.
Very, very interesting. Jason, I guess at this point the question is, where can we find the book? And also, where can people, you mentioned those sites on social media, where can people tune into all that to look at your work, maybe even submit some of their own photographic evidence? What are all the touch points, the book, the sites, and so forth?
Yeah, well, my site is called, on Facebook, etc., it's UF Only. And it just covers all UFO sightings, anomalies, and things of that nature. And it's on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, etc. And I've also got a YouTube channel under the same name. The book, which is basically an extension, really, is called UFO Photo. And it's through Flying Disc Press, through Philip Mantle, who is also a well-known ufologist.
Yes.
And published an author himself. The book generally covers its computer analysis of worldwide UFO images through the decades. And it just it basically gives you a basic run and understanding of ufology before you and where to look, and etc. There's good points in there. Nick Pope has actually wrote a good piece, because he came out to the RAF Cosford incident. He was actually in Whitehall in London. He was under the British X-Files desk, as you'd say. And he had quite a bit to do with it afterwards. And he's wrote a good piece in the book of the aftermath and how he dealt with it. And the book is available on Amazon.
Very good. Now, Jason, one question that occurred to me as you were saying that, so I'm going to break protocol here and ask it, because I thought, well, do you have any kind of guess whatsoever? And I've got to guess it's a fairly small percentage of the percentage of either photos or videos that you bring into your analyzing process. What percentage do you think at the end you say, that's unexplained, I don't know what that is, there may really be something to this? Do you have a fix on that at all?
Not an actual percentage, but if you need to put it in a perspective, probably 1-2%, I would say, are authentic. And you can go deeper into it. And when I say authentic, I mean, there's an actual object, structured object in the photograph. It's actually there in comparison to its surroundings, etc. Whether it's known or unknown, whether it's a secret covert military, secret project, which I believe there are an awful lot of craft out there are misidentified. But there is a small number that I believe are extraterrestrial, and they're visiting the Earth, having experiences and so forth with their people on Earth.
Very good. Our guest has been Mr. Jason Gleaves. His book is UFO Photos, Computer Analysis of Worldwide UFO Images Through the Decades. And I'm looking at the page right here on Amazon, so you can certainly get it both in Kindle and paperback, it appears. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today on UFO Encounters.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for tuning in to UFO Encounters. We certainly appreciate it. And I'm sure Jason would agree. Keep your eyes to the sky. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.